Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 20th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. So, D.R., suppose I have a proposition for you. You're an out-of-work actor living in New Orleans. You're hanging around, you're trying to make it in the movie business, and some buddy sidles up next to you and says, hey, you know, for $60, put on this t-shirt and go to a meeting for me. And if you get a speaking role where you can stand up and make a little speech that I want you to make, I'll pay you $200. Would you accept that deal?
I would have said, you're talking to me?
Are you talking to me? So tell me the story about what happened in New Orleans, D.R.
The New Orleans City Council is asking the energy company Entergy New Orleans to keep a hold of all their documents related to the revelation that the company apparently hired a third-party entity that hired actors to testify in support of a new power plant that the New Orleans City Council has now approved of building. This is a major, major scandal, and Entergy is basically saying that they had no knowledge of this third-party company's plans to hire actors, and they're basically, you know, trying to wash their hands of everything. But there is a lot of speculation that they might have known a bit more than they're letting on about this plan to hire actors to basically fake support for a power plant. This is not the first time this has happened. There was controversy several years ago during the Waxman-Markey bill about astroturfing efforts to oppose the Waxman-Markey bill. And this seems to be of a tradition, if you will, opposition.
More than tradition, the thing that I read said it was the same group, the same consulting company has made a living off of making these, what you call AstroTurf, basically fake grassroots kind of thing. They did it against the Markey Waxman bill a few years ago, and they've done it again in New Orleans with respect to an energy, some sort of gas-powered plant that was going to be put in a neighborhood, a politically disadvantaged neighborhood in New Orleans, was going to get stuck with another gas-powered plant in another exercise of what we'd call environmental racism. And Entergy, which of course is a name we've heard, right? Entergy's doing a lot of, I can't even remember all the places where Entergy comes up. But I mean, they paid off these people and put them in to make speeches and wear the t-shirts. It's pretty reprehensible, but it shows you the character of the kind of people that we are fighting with, right?
And we have to reemphasize a point that Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen have recently made, which is that whenever right-wing extremists accuse progressives of faking crowds, of faking support for certain policies, that's a form of projection. In other words, because we see right-wingers and interests associated with right-wingers engage in AstroTurf, they assume everybody else is engaging in AstroTurf. If people who've been listening to Rush Limbaugh for years, they'll always remember Rush Limbaugh talking about Jesse Jackson and his rent-a-mobs. And now we realize it's really right. People of Limbaugh's ilk who are engaging in rent-a-mobs. And we're seeing the example of this with Entergy.
No, I completely agree with you. That sort of a willingness to accuse the other side of some heinous act usually means it's on your mind, right? You thought about doing it, and you think everyone else is ready to go do it. Yeah, I mean, what did Shakespeare say, right? I think you doth protest too much.
Exactly.
Some line about in that vein. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it really is a sad thing. Think of this crazy guy who goes around making videos. That's a whole other topic. But yeah, anyway,
that's on Friedman's cited that sort of a shtick that the late Andrew Breitbart was fond of associating himself with.
Well, so next time you go to a protest meeting or some sort of hearing, I suppose it's diabolical in the sense that now you distrust the other side, right? The bona fides of the other side, you can't even believe in. You can't go to a public meeting on the assumption that everyone's operating in good faith and all the speakers there are in good faith, that you look in, at least in the back of your mind, you wonder, are all those people in the shirt, you know, in the colored shirts, are they really there for real or are they getting paid? And that's poisonous, that brought on by people like Entergy.
And if you think about it, talk about art imitating life, imitating art. If you remember, this was the storyline of that Matt Damon movie, Promised Land. If you remember that movie, the storyline of that movie was a pro-fracking company hiring somebody to pretend to be anti-fracking and then discrediting the person they had hired to get people to support fracking.
Yeah, it's like double three-dimensional chess.
Yeah.
Well, I know that recently in Boston, the people working for Community Choice Aggregation of Energy were coordinated wearing yellow shirts, so they'd all be in the city hall, and that it has an impact. And so to do it in a dishonest way is, I don't know, is it criminal? I mean, I think you said before that the people down in New Orleans are going to be subpoenaed for.
Yes.
Right. So I don't know what law they broke, but. Good.
I do wonder if it's a form of it will be considered a form of fraud under Louisiana law.
There you go. You know, I think Louisiana law, if correct me, you know more about law than I do, DR, but my memory is that Louisiana law is derived from French law, where you are, and under the Napoleonic Code, of course, which is where it all came from, you are guilty until proven innocent, which is the opposite of the American way of being innocent until proven guilty. Right? Is that true? Mm-hmm. Do you know that one? I mean, maybe I just learned that in third grade, and now I'm pulling it out.
I think it's something along those lines. It's going to be interesting to see. And of course, depending on what the political circumstances are in Louisiana, whether or not there'll be any sort of prosecution.
Even if in fact there is
evidence stirring up that they may have done something that ran afoul of the law.
I agree with you on that. So there's that. I guess. Speaking of running afoul of the law and all kinds of underhanded politics, was Huey Long in Louisiana, right? Huey Long.
I believe so.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, put Huey Long aside for a minute. We've got another scoundrel swamp monster walking around. And of course, I'm tired of talking about Scott Pruitt. I mean, the man's reprehensible. His personal venality and the things he does, I think, are reflective of his respect and integrity when it comes to enforcing environmental law, that he will just give everything away. But there is kind of this scandal that I'm not even sure has really fully broken yet, because there was a report, I'll ask you to give the full story, DR, but there's a report that about water quality that was suppressed by the White House and the EPA because the new observations in the water quality report were simply too scary for the White House to announce. So they took it and they hid it under the sofa and pretended it was going to go away, right? Tell me the story of the water quality report.
Politico.com obtained emails showing that, according to EcoWatch, officials with the White House and the EPA tried to block a critical report on a class of toxic chemicals and its effect on our water supply after a White House aide warned that a public relations nightmare would fall after its release. They were going to the Health and Human Services was going to release a report on what's called PFAS and polluting water supplies and sites around the country, including chemical plants and military bases. And basically, the Trump administration and the EPA sought to suppress this study. So now there's a push to have the study released. And it's just one more example of the sort of perfidy of Pruitt. But yet Pruitt's, ironically enough, water carriers are still defending the guy and still saying he's doing a swell job. In defending this guy who is sort of trying to cover up reports about dirty water, they seem to be drinking the Kool-Aid.
Drinking the Kool-Aid is,
you know.
I mean, the analogy to Flint, Michigan, is not that far-fetched. I mean, that we could all be, right after, you know, shaking our heads and saying, "Oh my goodness," looking at the terrible events in Flint, maybe we're all going to be drinking that water sometime soon. It turns out that this, I can't pronounce the chemical, but I know the PF is PFOA and PFOS, I think, are the two. Mm-hmm. And the PF stands for perfluoridated something something, right? So mm-hmm. these are compounds, and my understanding is they were used in firefighting equipment. So this is like this, shall we say, it's not toxic. It's a benign kind of passive spray stuff. But it gets into the water supply, particularly around military bases and industrial sites, and it gets into the water. And I guess the report I saw somewhere said most Americans carry some of it in their bloodstream, and that is now more dangerous. The report says this is dangerous at lower levels, particularly for children and nursing mothers, than had previously. And I don't know how much you remember, but here in Massachusetts, down in Edwards Air Force Base. So Edwards Air Force Base is this huge swath of land just on the other side of the Cape Cod Canal, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the subject of live fire experiment, I think it was live fire, for years. And there's lead buried in the ground, there's chemicals, it got into the water supply. Incredibly expensive and long term arguments about cleaning that up. The federal government owned it, right? It was an army base. Right? The same thing sounds like it's going to happen here, is that the U.S. Army owns responsibility for some of this PFOA getting into the water, and then that means it's got to come out of the Donald Trump slush fund to pay off and correct the problem. And that, I don't know, I mean, it seems like this is a serious issue that's being hidden, and we got to track it, because the pressure to have that report be released, I hope, can only grow. Right?
It is just when you think about, and once again, this whole controversy underscores the venality of Pruitt, this guy who looks in the mirror and in his mind sees a pro-lifer.
Right.
Really, this is pro-life. Drinking contaminated water and covering it up, that's real pro-life. What's being done to Flint, that's real pro-life.
Right. I mean,
Come on.
I think that it's funny. I started to laugh when you spoke, but when you say that, I can only think that Scott Pruitt looks in the mirror and sees himself with kind of a laurel wreath around his head, like a Roman emperor, right? Mm-hmm. Those images of the little crown those guys would wear. I don't know. Scott Pruitt's a dangerous guy.
I mean, I bet you the water in the swamp is cleaner than some of the water that's in all around the country.
I mean, and the other distressing and unhappy-making thing that the administration has done this past few weeks has been to cancel a satellite that was intended to measure concentrations of carbon dioxide around the world. Right. And so what that sounds like is a kind of geeky experiment that doesn't really matter, run by some scientists down in down at NASA. But the problem is that satellite was intended, or was at least was able to contribute to measurement of greenhouse gas emissions by different countries around the world, and so would have provided a backstop and a common measure of carbon dioxide emissions that supported the Paris Accord, which, of course, is still going on, and the United States is still a member of, even though our non-president, Spanky, the president, has tried to pull us out. I mean, we could have helped document whether or not countries around the world were meeting their promises and were actually doing what they said they were going to do under the Paris Accord until they decided to kill the satellite.
Let's not forget that a month after Trump won the Electoral College, California Governor Jerry Brown said, quote, "If Trump turns off the satellites, California will launch its own damn satellite," unquote. So I would submit to you that not only should Brown live up to his word, that, you know, there's a gubernatorial election in California coming up later this year. I would think that climate activists in California ought to pressure those who are running to basically commit to launching that own damn satellite if Trump is now that Trump has done what he's done.
I tell you, it would be a good idea. It would be a good idea. So I suppose in the more, I mean, it's a weird way of a weird kind of good news, but it is a little bit of good news, is in the New York Times this morning, there was an article saying that despite being an extremely red state and an extremely fossil fuel dependent state for its revenue, Alaska is finally coming to terms with the fact that climate change cannot be ignored and is a serious problem for the state. Did you see any of that?
Yes, apparently apparently Alaska is considering implementing a policy where there will be a tax implemented on fossil fuel extraction, and that tax will be used to finance clean energy because even those in Alaska, Alaskan elected officials who would never consider themselves members of 350.org, even they're recognizing that climate change is going to have a significant economic impact on the state. Of course, as I read this article, I couldn't help noting that there was a certain famous Alaskan who was not quoted. I'm assuming that Sarah Palin cannot be reached for comment, but I'm assuming
she's,
if you ask,
she's looking at Russia.
I assume if you ask if she's still a denier, she'll say, "You betcha."
Well, I looked at the, I read that article and I just thought how incredibly schizophrenic the whole thing is. Because Alaska, of course, has the North Shore oil, has the pipelines that bring the oil down. It's an incredibly large fossil fuel producing state. They just enthusiastically greeted the idea of drilling in the Atlantic National Wildlife Reserve up there, up in the Anwar. But at the same time, they think they're going to pass a carbon tax on the energy that's used in the state. And it just seems, I mean, it's a good thing. God bless them for doing that. But the complaint about the carbon tax in Alaska is that they say, oh, well, this is a global problem and it doesn't really matter. So this is the opposition saying you shouldn't have a carbon tax because what we do in Alaska was such a tiny fly on the tail of the tiger. We don't, what we do doesn't really matter. And at some level, that's true, especially if you're pumping out fossil fuel through the pipeline down to the lower 48 as fast as you possibly can. I mean, I think it's an unresolvable dilemma for these guys, right?
Yeah. Somebody in the comment section basically makes the comparison to Texas and how Texas is installing a lot of wind power despite Texas still being obsessed with fossil fuels. I think it was noted, not in the comment section, but it's been noted previously, that one of the biggest proponents of wind power when he was governor was George W. Bush, who of course went to Washington and didn't do a damn thing about to advance wind power. So it's like that sort of, you know, sort of a dual-minded view of this is sort of manifesting itself all over the place.
Yes, it's a schizophrenia writ large. Exactly. Well, I guess, and the other thing I just want to mention, and I'll try and put up a link to it, is that there is a report that came out this past few weeks pointing out that the planets Jupiter and Venus have a very subtle but very long-term impact on the orbit of planet Earth. That is to say, the gravitational pull from Jupiter and Venus in certain circumstances will both sort of tug on the Earth, because there's gravity between the Earth and the Sun, and there's also gravity between the Earth and Jupiter and between any planets in the solar system. There's a little tiny bit of gravity. And the gravity, sort of the paths of Jupiter and Venus kind of align with each other over the course of some 400,000 years to elongate the path of the Earth. Mm-hmm. And on that 400,000-year cycle, you will get climate change. And I just, it's an interesting little piece. These guys have, again, teased out the scientists have found explanations for their observations of the way the Earth has, the Earth's climate has changed in the past. Everyone sees that the climate does change. This particular effect is over a 400,000 year period, which is quite long. If you think from year to year, I mean, 400,000 years is quite a long time, and that's the cycle that they're looking at. The current climate change that we're witnessing is happening on the scale of 100 years, right, versus 400,000 years. Anyway, it's just an interesting point that these guys still can, you know, 300 years after Newton, can still figure out some little gravitational effect between the Earth, Venus and Mars.
Indeed.
Anyway, so let me just say before we go that there are a couple of events coming up that are of interest to Climate Hawks. Let's see, on June Excellent. June 8th. Let's start on June 8th. Right here in Boston. June 8th will be the day before, or the day of the mayor's climate conference. That's right here in Boston. There will be a protest outside of that that conference to try and get Mayor Walter's attention to do even more stuff on climate. So there's an event on June 8th. Then on June 9th, there is what's called a March for the Oceans, right, DR? Tell me more about that one.
It's going to take place in Washington, D.C. There will be satellite marches across the country, indeed all around the world, protesting the Trump administration's obsession with trying to have offshore drilling and basically raising awareness about ocean acidification and the general damage that that is being inflicted upon our oceans due to carbon emissions and carbon pollution. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a very, very interesting event. It'll be interesting in two dynamics, as we've mentioned before, you know, because it's on a Saturday, how much media coverage it will receive. Obviously, the March for Our Lives, which occurred on a Saturday, received significant media coverage. Hopefully, this will receive a similar amount. And also, what will be the aftermath? Will it motivate people going into the 2018 midterms and beyond to basically get up and vote in defense of the oceans? Because if that does not happen, then, of course, the rise of the oceans will not slow and the planet will not heal.
Well, I just want you to know that this election, everyone is voting. Everyone, it's going to be a historic event. Everyone is interested, and everyone, people are making a statement about their environmental credentials by voting. And they see the connection between their environmental beliefs and the act of voting. That connection is becoming more and more clear. And I think there, it's going to be a crowded day at the ballot box. So I'm looking forward to November, well, whatever it is, November elections. I'm not sure what the date is yet.
November 6th.
November 6th. So there's that on June 9th. Then on June 23rd, MCAN will be having a meeting up in Concord of people interested in making their municipal power plants more green. I'll put up a link to that. But if you have a municipal power plant in your town and you would like them to become greener, here's your chance to learn all about it. You can go and connect with people who can help you do that. That would be a great day. And then finally, in July, so this is July 21st, there's going to be another sort of national climate march called Zero Hour, which is basically been queued up by teenagers, right? This is somehow an analog to the group of students at Parkland High School down in Florida, right? Who had, this is another kids talking about climate change. So as we get closer to that, we'll be pushing it. Those meetings and both the June 9th March for the Ocean and probably Zero Hour will have satellite marches around the country. So you can connect to that, right?
Indeed, indeed. And once again, you know, how many of those kids at the Zero Hour March in July 21 will turn 18 before November the 6th.
And you know what? They're all they're all ready to vote. They're all enthusiastically they're going to display their environmental citizenship and environmental commitment by voting. So there you go. All right. So we'll put up links to those things in the blog, which you can find, that blog that you can find at Mass Climate Action. massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, many of the other podcast distribution applications. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening, all you climate voters. It's going to be fun going to the polls. We'll all march together. Take care. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Very cool.